Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So today's interview is with the executive director of the Canadian Race Relations Foundation. Her name is Anita Bromberg, and we had a great chat. We talked about racism in Canada. We talked about anti-Semitism and tolerance and this idea of outing others and why hate speech and free speech are two very, very different things. Of course, we touched on reconciliation and all of the sort of the touch points, but we talked too very specifically about the notion of inclusion and whether or not it's enough. And change being kind of too fast. And so you get some really interesting insights there for sure from Anita on a whole lot of things and why she believes we need to continue fighting racism, of course, but also need to work towards building inclusion. Please check out davidpecklive.com for more podcasts. We are now over 200 interviews online. Check them out there. Sign up for the email list. Please subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Check us out on Rabble. And if you want to find out more information about my speaking and my writing, you can do that there. So please stay tuned for Anita Bromberg with the Canadian Race Relations Foundation. Well, welcome to Face to Face, and we are joined by another very special guest today. Anita Bromberg is here with us. She's the executive director for the Canadian Race Relations Foundation. Anita, thank you for your time today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah. Well, here we are sitting in the Japanese Canadian Cultural Center, the day after Michelle Obama's speech at the Democratic Convention in the U.S., where she said, quote, "I wake up each day in a house built by slaves," close yeah. quote. It's kind of an appropriate timing. We've had a bit of trouble finding time to have this interview, but the timing in a way couldn't be better.
Yeah, that line is obvious and yet startling, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, in some ways, you know, being a Canadian, I guess there's a part of me that's not smug, but certainly is sort of proud of our Canadian heritage, whatever that means.
Right.
But, you know, the fact that we're do-gooders and that we have this inclusive approach. And you look at what we're doing with, you know, Syrian families and refugees and so on. And yet there's an edge where I say, really, there's a need for a Canadian Race Relations Foundation? Tell me more about that and where this came from. Because it's a relatively new foundation.
It is, I would think, relatively, if you're measuring it by Canadian history, where we're heading for the 150 year. A young child actually in one of my presentations asked me, is there racism in Canada? He's about 5-6 years old. And I think the teacher started running over to hush him because I guess she knew where he was going. And I said, yes, I said, and then, you know, and I said, it's an ever-growing problem. And he says, but you've been fighting it all your life, you said. I said, I have, you know. I remember when I told them a story of how I countered and faced an anti-Semitic bully, actually, when I was 4 years old.
Wow.
And so the child looks at me, he says, so there is racism, was sort of in his mind, and I've been fighting it all my life. So he says, guess you're not doing a good job.
And then, so and funny. I, you know, apparently going to be a comedian later in life.
Well, or a serious commentator,
yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, my answer back was, well, you know, I hope we're making a difference. And I think that's the reality. I don't think that we're ever going to wipe out racism. You know, Star Trek started with that vision, and I think as you watch the latest shows, I think they realize too that that's an unrealistic goal. Nonetheless, I think that should be our goal. I think there should be a zero tolerance to racism.
Do you live in a would you say you live in a hope so universe in a sense?
Well,
you know, that you hope that we eliminate racism, but
right.
The reality is we probably won't.
Right. The best we can do is out the others. But there's always going to be the others that are stirring the pot. You know, I think face the reality, you know, that individuals, we're part of the human race. The human race. I believe there is only one human race. Mm. We make distinctions naturally, right? You know, a child has to learn some survival techniques. You pat a kitty, you run from a tiger. You know, you are selective on the friends that you make, but they're. The value judgment that comes with it comes through learning, through interaction with adults. And it's the responsibility of adults, of what we pass on to our kids, that then are the proof of the pudding of where we're going on these, from the natural distinctions we make amongst people to outright racism. You know, it's an ongoing initiative from birth on. More we understand the process, the better we can counter it.
Is it? Do you think it has? Is it a nature nurture kind of a thing? Is it all about socialization?
I think so. I don't think any child. I guess I'm. I don't know. Do I remember my philosophy of 101 in university? I can't believe that any child is born evil. I suppose there's the rare case that you could say that there's something wrong from the moment they came out of, were born. But I think, you know, I interact with kids all the time, and you can't help but understand that, you know, even when a kid is being rotten, you know, you can find the goodness in that child. And
well, there seems to be, I think, you know, having, you know, fairly young father still, I think there is an inclusivity to kids
right.
to a certain point. And then you start to see it in the schoolyard. You start to hear stories, the bullying, the separatism, the exclusivity,
yeah.
you know, the other. They're something other than we are. I'm reading the book Wonder right now. I don't know
right.
if you know it, but it's all about bullying, and it's really, there is an underlying tone of this objectification of the other, which it seems to me that we do pretty easily, but...
But it's the value judgment you put on it, that, and their adults have an important role to play in educating our kids. And when I say adults, I'm talking about teachers, I'm talking about the school system, I'm talking about everybody around it. You know,
politicians, community group leaders,
you know,
et cetera. Yeah.
That African philosophy that it takes a village to raise a child. I think it's very important. Just today I heard on the CBC, and I won't remember the name of the educator, but he was very forceful in reminding that the schools need to get a handle on it. Because what ultimately, you know, racism is a poison that spreads, it can be countered. But if it's not countered, you know, it goes right up the totem pole, so to speak, right to... right to outright racism.
Do you think the conversation is or has to be about racism? It's not about race anymore. I mean, your comment earlier, you know, there is only one human race.
Oh, well, anybody that tried, you know, the very concept of race was I think, largely enlarged into our daily conversation by those that are racists. Mm. You can justify slavery if you say they're not the same as you, they're of a different race. That's just a process of othering.
So we can't not talk about this. I open up with Michelle Obama's
right.
comment. We can't not talk about what's going on in the U.S. just a little bit. We'll bring it back to the Canadian context in a second here. But, you know, you've got the Trump rhetoric. You've got the Democratic rhetoric. One seems to be more inclusive than the other. Where are you sitting with this? Is there a deep underlying unsettling tone of racism in the West that we just haven't dealt with yet, that clearly is bubbling to the surface as a result of what's going on in the U.S.?
The quick answer is yes.
Mm.
The longer answer is sure, there's distinctions that we can make between us and the United States, and we can sit here smugly and say that we're not United States, but you know, and you'll hear that, let's say, in countering the existence of the Black Lives Matter movement here in Canada. You know, we're not the United States, you don't need it here. But I don't think that's helpful to the conversation, because essentially what we need to do is understand each other's stories.
That's good, yeah.
Right? We need to open our hearts and our minds and really hear what other people's experiences are. And the minute I say to somebody that's engaged in the Black Lives Matter, well, you know, guys, this is Canada now, not United States. And I can sit smugly and say there are differences, and I believe there are differences. But what am I doing when I say that? What I'm doing is silencing them. I'm not listening to their stories and their experiences, which I can learn from. Which can help foster a more inclusive Canada. And the fact is that, you know, we like to believe the image of Canada as always being an inclusive society. And sure, you can find it. I mean, you know, why was Canada created as a bilingual country? It was a recognition from the beginning that if Canada was going to prosper, then you know, we're going to find a way for the British and the French to work together. It was purposely designed as at least a bi-inclusive from the beginning. Fortunately, we know that now better that it should have been an inclusive society for all, including, for example, obviously the Aboriginal and we communities, and we obviously have a huge problem to face here. And although I think here's where my hope springs come back, I think we've opened an important door to a long path ahead, I think. You know, we can make distinctions, but the bottom line is that there's been racism in Canada ever since the first white man set shores on Aboriginal lands and failed to recognize the treaties that were made in good faith and all that goes to it. I mean, that's a 10-year conversation.
Right.
But we have to recognize that there's problems here. And look, you see the ugly graffiti that is, against the immigrant populations, the refugee population. Calgary is an example, but it's only one example. You see the racism against the Black communities. I could pinpoint and say to you, oh, yes, that's Hamilton, that's Halifax.
Right.
These are cities we visited, but you know, the reality is it happens everywhere. Aboriginal communities, you know, Winnipeg was labeled last year by Maclean's, I believe, as actually based on, I would say, not a clear reading of our survey products, that Winnipeg is the most racist spot in Canada. where the truth comes from that is that Winnipeg has a large Aboriginal urban population, and a lot of the problems that exist across Canada are centered in Winnipeg. And Winnipeg can be, and good for the mayor, Winnipeg can be, has taken up the challenge to be a model of change. Mm. You know, I am one of the largest
Mennonite populations as well, I believe, right?
True.
Which is kind of ironic in a way.
I mean,
I'm not sure what that says at this point, but...
Yeah, well, and you know, it was for a long time the home to one of the largest Jewish populations in Winnipeg as well.
Are we just afraid of each other? I mean, a massive oversimplification, but is that sort of what it comes down to?
I suppose you could call it fear. I think what our surveys show is that we really don't understand each other. And that goes back to my point with the Black Lives Matters. We need to listen
to
each other's stories. That's where it starts. That's really at the root of reconciliation. You can talk about activities that are needed. You can talk about the impact that you want to have all these models tell you to build, but you know, I truly believe it's about the dialogue and the conversations, finding ways to interact with each other.
And do you think, Anita, that eventually, and I am all about education and understanding and listening and so on. Do you think, though, that will, in fact, lead to change? Will it lead legislation and so on?
And new
worldviews, I guess.
So the fact is, education and educators can't do all the work by themselves. You know, a teacher can teach a child all they want, but if they go home to a family where there's bullying and, you know, insensitive, if not outright racist remarks, you know, what's the child to think? Who's the child going to listen to? I think that everybody has a part of it. So there is a role, and I hate to say it because some people will disagree with me, but I truly believe there's a role for the criminal system to counter hate speech. I've used the criminal system. I think it should be the extreme case. I agree.
Do you mean to actually put somebody away,
yep.
to arrest somebody or charge somebody based on hateful speech?
I 100% think that every sector of society has a role to play. And in my work, I've called on sectors across communities, across the country, to step up to the plate. No one group can do it.
Recently, I saw an article with, I think Jerry Seinfeld was interviewed by maybe Stephen Colbert or somebody, one of the late night guys. And there's a concern amongst comics that there's this idea of being politically correct is taking over, and this idea of, well, they're going to start restricting what comics can say because, you know, we're all about comedy and we're all about puncturing holes and skewering. And if that happens, then what, right? I mean, this is what a comic does. This is about satire and so on. And I guess it's about freedom of speech.
Right.
Are you in that camp, or would you say, hang on a second here, there are lines?
For you,
there are lines.
Hate speech and free speech are two different things. Free speech builds a democracy where all voices have an equal chance to be part of a conversation. Hate speech excludes groups from that conversation. It breaks down democracy.
And is that the kind of thing that the Canadian Race Relations Foundation is adding value to and saying, well, we can help with that. We can help you understand what actually hate speech or hateful speech actually is or might be.
As a matter of fact, little plug moment. But
yes, please, go.
Our upcoming conference, the conference that we hold every 2 years that brings together people that are interested and active in the sector of building diversity and inclusivity, come together. We call it, bringing communities together, and we mean not only individuals, but sectors. The theme for this year is building an inclusive Canada. And the backdrop is, you know, we're hitting the 150 mark of Canada.
Right.
What do we see are the barriers now to building that kind of Canada that certainly the majority want to see.
And this conference, keynote speakers, breakout sessions, there'll be lots of wonderful food, no doubt.
I hope so. It's going to be
Got to provide some incentive.
There you go. Well, I promised you good coffee.
Good coffee, yeah. Excellent. And it's being held October 26th and 27th at the Japanese Canadian Cultural Center, not far from the Science Center.
Not far, right across from the Aga Khan Museum, too. We're in a great location.
And I'm going to say to my listeners, you need to come to the conference just to hang out at the Japanese Canadian Cultural Center. It has got to be the coolest building, best-kept secret in Toronto.
I was
blown away when I first arrived. Remarkable.
It's been remarkable because it's part of the story of the Japanese community. Mm-hmm. So at the conference, one of the things we're going to be doing is in our breakouts and panel sessions is actually looking at those kinds of issues. What do we want around policy, for example, police, human rights commissions, in as we build an inclusive, continue to build.
So conversation for you, for the foundation, then does lead to change, does lead to legislation, does lead to policy. It has to in a way, doesn't it?
That's the difference between, a gathering where you just watch, let's say, and it absolutely has its place. You know, you have a multicultural festival where you watch each other's dancing, and that's a great way to get to know each other, and it certainly has its place. We want to have conversations that are a little bit more directed, in a way that breaks down barriers and builds inclusion.
Do you come out of a conference like this with recommendations that you might present?
Absolutely. We do a briefing looking at what could be the next steps, and it's an opportunity for those that are thinking about this, that are engaged in this, that it's vital to their work, for youth that want to see the future and want to make it better, to come together and put an action plan. The original title was an action plan, but we thought we'd be a little more creative. But essentially, that's what we want to focus on is that plan of action.
As I continue to do these interviews with people like yourself who are doing great things and trying to shift the needle, as it were, when it comes to social change, always fascinated by why this and not something else? Why aren't you working as an executive at Tim Hortons or, something along those lines? Can you talk a little bit more about that? Was it, you were 4 years old when you were bullied? Is there a thread? Can we look back to that and say that might be the pebble in the pond for you?
There was absolutely a thread. I grew up largely with immigrant grandparents, a whole host of grands, great aunts and so forth. They raised me until around the time that I was 12, when my grandmother unfortunately passed away, probably the worst day of my life, because she's brought so much insight into my life. But the incident was around being 4 years old and finding myself with my grandmother, who didn't speak much English at all. She actually, funnily enough, knew more Aboriginal than English, because she worked with the Aboriginal community. So. But in any case, we were at the store, and I often, even as a young kid, would accompany her, and often found myself being the translator when she didn't know a word. And she had gone into the store looking for some brown bananas for her baking.
Okay.
The reduced stall, a counter.
Right, okay, right. I see what you mean. Right.
So she asked.
They're beyond ripe.
That's it. They make the best here.
Little
baking tip.
I do know that,
they make
yes.
the best bananas.
Elizabeth,
grits.
My wife, freezes them when they get to a certain point, and then they come out for muffins and so on.
So for those listening, there's my tip.
There you go. There's value in the face-to-face podcast.
There you go.
Yeah.
So she asked for some, and the next thing I knew, the manager, as it turned out, of the produce division, was mimicking her behind her back and making fun of her, and used a few racial slurs. Hmm. So what is a four-year-old kid to do?
Mm-hmm.
I turned around and walked up to him and I said to his face, and luckily he didn't hit me and throw me over the counter, but I basically said, I saw what you did, and I'm going to go talk to the manager of the store.
And how old are you?
4. Yeah.
Sounds like something my daughter Victoria might do.
Yeah, okay. So he actually was very embarrassed. My grandmother tried to drag me out of the store. She was so scared. But I stood my ground, and he apologized and went and found her all the bananas she could possibly want just to get her out of the store, I guess. But that was one of many encounters. Actually, I grew up in Winnipeg, and I was at a private Jewish school, and we had many incidents of being attacked in the playground by other kids with racial slurs accompanying the attacks, you know. Another time, my dad was pulling out of a parking lot and in a big mall, and he almost hit a guy on the bike. My dad's fault. And my dad jumps out of the car. My dad was a doctor in Winnipeg and was going to try to help this guy. And the guy looked up at him and said, "You effing J-word, get your hands off of me." And I looked at my dad and I said, "How did he know you were Jewish, Dad?" And my dad says, you know, some kind of, he makes a joke about it. But boy, was that a startling moment for a young kid.
I guess so. How you can't erase those kinds of moments,
no.
Right?
So if I could give you 100 of these little things that sort of propel me.
And yet in your case, it sounds like hatred didn't breed more hatred. Racism didn't breed more racism. It actually created in you a desire to see some kind of change. Now, maybe, you know, obviously there was an evolution there and it took time, but...
I think that's true. I think good role models, you know, my dad helping his patients.
How do you unpack that? What was the conversation when you got back in the car with your dad after that, right? I think that's something
that
I'm learning
important.
As a parent.
My
know?
Dad said, look, he was upset.
Defended him.
He defended him, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my dad was, you know, he was a little shaken that he almost ran someone
over. Yeah,
of
course,
but he didn't say that I should, you know, hate those kind of people.
Right, right.
I certainly heard from my parents, you know, some sympathy for what was a growing Aboriginal urban problem. And, you know, that's absolutely wrong. The problems that the urban-based Aboriginal communities were facing in Winnipeg, not, you know, the opposite could have been racist remarks,
sure,
you know.
Sure.
So I think that where I am now is certainly an evolution. I mean, I ended up in law, could have stayed in the practice of law doing, I don't know, real estate deals.
Right.
I don't know what. It wasn't my favorite thing. But again, one of my kids had an influence on me when I was tucking him into bed when he was about 6 years old. And he said to me in the cutest voice, he said, "So, Mommy, did you do anything good today?" I don't
That's
know exactly
great.
What he meant by good.
Yes, of course.
But I had just done a real estate deal, and an individual was less than appreciative of the great effort that it made. And so there I was thinking, oh, my goodness, I got to do something different with my life and fast. So, there's a lot of things that influence
The building blocks, right? This is why I'm so on about the little things making a big difference, mm-hmm. the splash and ripple effect, the domino, whatever you want to call it. I mean, when you go back and you look, I mean, here's an article I found recently, Scott Gilmore from Maclean's magazine, the title, "Canada's Race Problem, It's Even Worse Than America's." Listen to this. Quote, "The racial mess in the U.S. looks pretty grim and is painful to watch. We can be forgiven for being quietly thankful for Canada's more inclusive society, which has avoided dramas like that in Ferguson, etc. We are not the only ones to think this. In the recent released Social Progress Index, Canada is ranked second amongst all nations for its tolerance and inclusion. Unfortunately, the truth is we have a far worse race problem than the United States. We just can't see it very easily." Close quote. That's Scott Gilmore from an article January 22nd in Maclean's 2015. I mean, he goes on to paint kind of a fairly grim picture of us as Canada. I know, you know, to your story, you go back not that long ago. there's lots in our history that we have to not be proud of. Lots. You know, back to the Second World War and so on. I mean, you don't have to go very far back to say we've come a long way. We're not maybe the country that we thought we were. And then he ends the article by basically saying we need to admit Canada has a race problem, period.
So and it's interesting now because, and I agree with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of see the Canadian Race Relations Foundation as being very strategically placed to make a difference through mm-hmm. various initiatives that we
sure,
have,
sure.
from a dive this year into youth activities, our conference, and then translating those into some briefing exercises with the government. We're, as you know, we're an odd mix of both a Crown agency that grew out of the Japanese redress agreement, as well as a not-for-profit, even charitable status. That I kind of like to see us as a bridge between government and the communities, and opening that bridge so that there's, you know, not the ugly trolls at either end, so to speak, is how I see it.
Well, and just to be clear, you are not entirely funded by the government. You are definitely looking for support and donations and families and people to come alongside, and this is what you mean about that odd mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we have a model for that from our very history. I mean, mm-hmm. the Japanese redress agreement, the people that were behind it, like such as Art Mickey, who is to this day still on our board as an adjunct member, they saw the need that if they were going to counter the ugly kinds of racism that community faced over World War II and afterwards. I mean, mm-hmm. ask mm-hmm. the young guys coming out of the internment camps how hard it was to get a job.
Right.
You know,
right.
But you know, the amazing stories, the Pope comes through too, because it was an opportunity for individuals from communities that never really had anything to do with each other to reach out to each other. You hear, you know, the inspiring stories of Adrian Clarkson of how the neighbor grocery man, you know, supported their family at the worst time. A young Japanese guy, story of how he came to Toronto after internment camp looking for work, and a Jewish man making jeans or something, you know, gave him a bit of test, found him to be the most honest of individuals, and gave him a job, and there was a lifelong
sure.
friendship that
yeah.
came out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are inspiring stories.
This is incremental change, right? This is building blocks, splash
right.
and ripple. Yeah.
But
the
Japanese community took a portion of the money that was coming to them as redress, and said, we're going to build an institution that's going to be there to fight racism, to build inclusion. And I take that, you know, mandate very seriously now, especially we there's all kinds of pressures on that. We see how you know, simple acts of insensitivity growing right through the range to, you know, and there's a direct connection to radicalization, to terrorism. Terrorism is hate.
Sure.
It's just a lethal form of hate. It's lethal because the hate is attached to philosophy, and that it's not necessarily new, because white supremacists have long attached a philosophy to their hate, and has inspired them even to do acts of violence. And Canada is not immune to any of this range of activities, from simple acts of prejudice, of biases, stereotyping that might close some doors for individuals when they're looking for jobs or equity in schools, right to the range of hate-inspired violence. We've seen it. You know, we know that Canada's not immune to it. Air India, people forget about it. It's there. It was based on hate that found its way to bring Canada into it. We've had the knife-wielding extremists that have rocked this country. I don't think it's about numbers. I think it's about needing to get the conversation right. And the good part is that we have a base. You know, our report on Canadian values, a survey that we did in 2014, that launched our present project that's just coming to an end this year, focusing on shared Canadian values. And we did a survey about what values Canadians see as important to them. And, you know, interestingly enough, multiculturalism, while it featured, wasn't the top ranking.
Oh, okay.
I think because it's just who we are. We've come to accept it. We don't always agree what it exactly means, but we've accepted it. And same with bilingualism. But the values that came up on top was, you know, democracy, human rights. The list goes on along that thread. Civility, even. These were things that Canadians valued. Well, I see that as the hope.
Right.
If we can agree on these shared Canadian values, then we just have to figure out how to bring everybody into the conversation. And to me, that suggests something else. We always play around with the words, right? Like tolerance. Is that a good word? Is that a bad word to talk about what we want? Wrong way. I thought I'd turn that off.
I think that was Prime Minister Trudeau.
It wasn't. Yeah. I would have taken the call. But it's funny that you'd say that because this is, you know, he's talked a lot about
these issues,
you know, and he's done a great job of putting them on the table. Best we take them out from under the table and put them on the table.
Yeah. Well, this is where, I mean, you know, you got to start somewhere and the conversation has to begin. Right?
And one thing we all know, that if you're going to counter racism, you better have the leaders with you.
Right.
Leading the charge, reacting to those incidents where they happen, helping the other, you know.
Nicholas Kristof just published an article in the New York Times and is looking at the historical racial edge to the Trump family, and he's very careful not to come out and say that they're racist. However, that's certainly the implication. Mm. And when you know, just as you mentioned that, and you say you got to have the leaders, this is where, I mean, I'm getting a shiver. This is where I think a lot of us start to get quite concerned about.
Yep.
But what blew me away about it all, I know I don't want to get sidetracked because we are going to have to wrap up here shortly, Anita, but it's the response.
Yeah.
It's the way people are responding. It seems to be a little too gleeful, if that's the right word,
well,
you know, saying, wow, he's finally speaking out for us, you know.
But not everybody agrees.
And no,
that brings
heavens,
me
no.
sort of where yeah. I was
Back
going.
Back to the hope.
Well, I think part of the conversation that we have to understand is that people do and use the word have fears. People do have concerns,
mm-hmm.
let's say,
mm-hmm.
around, let's say, immigration. In Canada, it was about, you know, what's happening to house prices in Vancouver or Chinese language signs in Richmond I don't want to stick with the West Coast, but in the interest of time, let's say, we're at, you know, we've got these kinds of concerns that come up. What happens too often is that the minute anybody expresses a concern, they're labeled as a racist.
Right.
And that shuts down the conversation.
Sure it does, yeah.
The reality is that we have issues that are challenging us. We have to find a way to have the dialogues. Tolerance is not necessarily what we want, because that means just putting up with
Putting up with other people, sure.
Inclusion is an interesting word that we now all we're using. Well, is that enough? See, my theory is that what's happening all too often is the change is just too fast.
Mm.
And you're asking people to accept that change where they don't really know the implications, they don't know the people around them. They've got real concerns, but they're even maybe out of political correctness, at least mindful enough to not even express them. So you got people not engaging in the conversation. Inclusion, I think, in some ways is not enough. There's another component, right? diversity isn't easy. It's easy to be diverse. It's a fact of life in Canada. It's long been where you know the majority of people it's at least fast approaching that the majority of people in many urban settings are the minority, which is kind of bizarre. We've got to change some of that language around there too. So diversity happens. Some organizations need to be a little more proactive around it, and the value of that we could talk, is another long conversation. Okay. Inclusion means that we find a way to make sure that the door is open to everybody. It was an interesting, Michelle Obama talks about, cracking that glass ceiling, but bringing everybody along with them. That's kind of what I see inclusion. But there's something missing in the conversation if you just stop at diversity. If you stop at tolerance, big problems. If you stop at just diversity, you haven't hit the mark. I don't think we hit the mark if we pat our hands when we see inclusion. So what exactly do we mean by inclusion? And I see it as opening the doors to understanding each other, making sure that everybody has an equal opportunity. But there's a problem, there's another word that's missing in that conversation, and that's, I think, the challenge of today, and that's the word cohesion. So when you force change where the community isn't comfortable with it, they see changes happening too quickly, and you hear that, for example, when we were in Richmond, BC, at one of our events, you clearly see that the change has happened. People living in that community for a long time are now not able to recognize their own community. And they're labeled as the racist and told to shut up. Well, that's not healthy. Some of them could be actual outright racists, but there are others that want to have this conversation. If you're going to achieve the promises of diversity, you have to face the challenges. And one of the challenges is not only inclusion, it's cohesion.
It's good. Community, conversation, cohesion. It's
having
good.
People working together. Mm. If you don't work to cohesion, I think you might see a more United States model, if you will. We're at the brink here too, there's the old saying that what happens in the United States is about 5 years ahead.
Right.
Well, I think we can't forget that. That's why the importance of the conversation, because it doesn't mean that everybody agrees.
Yeah, no, of course
not. But it means that everybody's willing to compromise in the interest of, peace building, if
and
you
And I think
will.
you started with empathy. And yep. I think that's it, the idea of listening to other people's stories. Thank you for your time today. Anita Bromberg, she's the executive director of the Canadian Race Relations Foundation. If you'd like to learn more about them, check them out online. But also, put it in your calendar, October 26th and 27th, 2016, at the Japanese Canadian Cultural Center, Realizing an Inclusive Canada 2017 and Beyond. It's their national conference and awards of excellence. Anita, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.